Chapter 13. Apartment 3B. When the mechanic had said, "It don't look like much, but it's solid," Trace now understood what solid meant. It was the quality of the clanging sound produced by the transmission of the beat-up brown Toyota truck with welded-on, oversized blue-striped camper when he tried to shift between second and third. While he technically didn't need air conditioning, the thought would have been nice. The intermittent backfire of the demolition derby veteran provided plenty of surprises for him and other motorists, and the blatantly non-aerodynamic shape of the vehicle plunged the gas gauge from right to left at an alarming rate out on the freeway. He got his new phone sorted out just before Best Buy closed. After grabbing a puzzle from a local store, he went in search of his new home. A school night ensured that when he coaxed his ungainly, swaying beast into the parking lot of the Sao Paulo apartment complex, no one was hanging around outside to laugh at him. The 20-year-old two-level apartments with tan siding weren't as horrible as he had first prognosticated based on the car he'd received, but they weren't within throwing distance of Cassandra's posh palace either. The faded asphalt had cracked and been sealed enough times to look like a weave, and two sickly palm trees framed the complex's office entrance, twin trunks shooting up from an unkempt island of grass. Trace wondered how many other ash angels might live there. But from the parking stickers on cars one or two levels of crappy above his, he guessed the place was filled with broke college students and young families. After a bit of hunting, he found the door to apartment 3B, his place, his castle, his refuge, and slid the key into the brass deadbolt. With expectations as high as the Titanic, he opened the door and fumbled for the light switch, the eco-friendly bulbs slowly brightening the room in front of him. Brown marbled linoleum overspread the entryway and the kitchen area, the chocolate-covered formica countertops and cheap cabinets adding to the earthy tone. The shaggy, multicolored carpet was designed to hide everything from cookie crumbs to a murder, and the freshly painted off-white walls gave off a fresh paint smell that helped the place feel new. Not bad. He shut the door and wandered into the functional, clean bedrooms. It would do nicely for a place he probably wouldn't visit all that often. He spent the night in his new digs, setting up his phone and doing a puzzle, a Sylvan mountain range at dawn. As a courtesy to the other residents, he didn't pull his drug dealer on the lam mobile out of the parking lot until he was sure most people had left and that any babies that might inhabit the complex were likely already awake. He returned 2 hours later with a 17-foot moving truck full of unknown items that were now his. He tried to think of opening the back of the truck as something like opening presents at Christmas, but he tempered his expectations. Christmas had been a mixed bag so far. With a heave, the door rolled up, and he put his hands on his hips and looked over his stuff. While he couldn't speak for the contents of the boxes, the furniture was nondescript and functional, a little worn and outdated, but not bad. About halfway through unloading, two cute college women, Mindy and Scarlett, greeted him and offered to help. Talking to real people turned out to be a little strange, especially when he found himself lying about everything. They were nice and flirty, and when he got back from returning the truck, they brought some pizza to his new apartment, and they ate it at the small brown table they'd helped him haul in earlier. Scarlett, a busty brunette, touched his arm.
"So was that thing your, car?"
"It's a loaner," Trace lied, finding the chronic dissembling getting easier. "I'll be getting my own shortly." That was true. This afternoon, if he could arrange it, though the trade-in value wouldn't get him a toaster. "You two in college?"
"I am," said Mindy, a thin blonde with intelligent eyes. "Scarlett's in beauty school." "I'll trade haircuts for computer help," Scarlett offered. "Mine seems slow lately."
Trace nodded. "Probably infected with something. I can look at it later if you're around."
"Sure," she answered. "Should we feed him dinner, Min? You could introduce him to Randy. That's her boyfriend." "Sort of boyfriend," Mindy clarified. "He's having a bit of trouble with the C word. You know, commitment. We got in a fight, and I don't think he likes me much right now." Scarlett gave her friend a sympathetic and almost sincere squeeze.
I'm sure he'll pull his head out.
She threw Trace a meaningful glance.
I haven't dated for a while.
A knock at the door saved him, and he threaded his way through the mess of boxes to the entryway, peering through the peephole. It was Cassandra, looking like a model who had lost her runway. Her hair was curled around her shoulders, and her breezy white blouse, tight dark pants, and high heels were complemented by designer sunglasses and silver jewelry. Did she have to get so dolled up? He was still rocking a second-hand hoodie and jeans. He opened the door and invited her in. His trainer's amused face took in the apartment.
Hey, Trace said, not quite sure what to call her. Good to see you. I've got some neighbors here that helped me move in. Come on in. It's a bit of a mess.
Thanks, Jason.
She strutted inside, Mindy and Scarlett standing.
Hi, Cassandra said. I'm Gwen.
This is Mindy and Scarlett, Trace said. They've been really great today. He turned back to Cassandra, and his jaw nearly dropped. Something about her had changed since he first saw her at the door. Her aura was flared. While always attractive, Cassandra was now stunning. His vision couldn't quite pick out the difference, but a feeling and a radiance about her now amplified her natural good looks. Mindy and Scarlett, clearly intimidated, managed to squeak out a,
"Nice to meet you."
Cassandra smiled at them, a goddess favoring her subjects with goodwill.
Thank you for helping Jason. I don't mean to be rude, but I've got some private matters I need to discuss with him if you don't mind.
Mindy and Scarlett practically fell over themselves getting out the door, apologizing to Cassandra for getting in the way and reiterating how nice it was to meet her. After the door shut, Cassandra's appearance immediately returned to normal, aura fading.
Hanging with the local skanks, Jarhead? She scoffed, clearing a box off a chair.
She sat down after she was satisfied the chair was clean enough not to ruin her clothes.
Hey, they've been really nice, Trace objected.
Oh, I bet,
Cassandra disparaged, looking around.
And Jason Storm? Really? Sounds like the pen name of a romance writer.
He rolled his eyes and started unpacking boxes in the modest kitchen to see what the Ash Angel Provisioning Center had come up with. I assume what you just did was your other bestowal?
It's called beauty. Comes in handy when persuading people, especially men, or trying to get a job as a receptionist. I thought it only fair that I let you see it.
Fair? He asked, pulling open a box full of mild chili.
Yeah. Did you know that besides not putting you into the system, they completely destroyed the Scholar's file they worked up on you? That meant I had to have lunch with Lear. Nice guy. A little off, though. He sends, let's see, his heartiest congratulations for Priscilla's rescue.
Had to have lunch with Lear?
It took him a moment to process her meaning, and then he stopped. That's not cool, he complained. You didn't have any right to go rifling around in my past. Her face hardened.
I may not have had a right, but I had a reason, Jarhead, so listen up. I was an Ash Angel for 2 years before I was torched for the first time. Skeletons I thought long buried crawled out of their graves and nearly took me down. Time dulls the sting of old wounds and makes the spirit shock more bearable. You've not been an Ash Angel for 2 months and have been torched twice. All the hurt and pain of your former life is still too fresh for you, and it will cripple you every time unless you face it. Today, you start. You don't have the luxury of time.
Why, what's going on?
Her phone rang. She pulled it out of her designer purse, looked at it in disgust, and tossed it back in her bag after silencing it.
Goldbo has been nagging me for a date ever since your first ride along. The man is relentless. Anyway, Maggie called me this morning. She has a mission that just came in from the Oculum that she's entrusted to me personally. We leave tomorrow. You get to come along.
Maggie?
Arcus Magdalene, the redhead from yesterday, remember?
Oh, right. He wondered what this was about. Didn't she just order a week-long vacation for me? And do you think I'm ready for an actual mission?
Plans change, and no, you aren't ready, Cassandra stated bluntly.
Then why did you pick me to go? He wondered.
I didn't. Arcus Magdalene did over my objections, and I don't mean that as an insult. Blanks typically train for 6 months to a year on missions of gradually increasing difficulty and complexity. You haven't been around for 6 weeks. You're observant, and you've got guts. But you don't have the experience you need. You morph too slowly, and spirit shock turns you into a pile of goo. And that's not good, especially where we're going.
Her worried expression and leaden tone sent a chill down his spine. Where is that?
It's an area around Seattle inundated with different waterways. Even before the Dreads got organized, we called it Davy Jones's Locker. More Ash Angels have disappeared or died in that area than any other, especially in recent months. Typically, that means a shed is involved. Even being in the presence of a shed causes a mild form of spirit shock.
It took a moment to remember that shed was the singular of Shedim. He'd heard a few things about them from his classes. Shedim varied in power from little better than a dread to ones so mighty they could whip up hurricanes. While dreads could not alter their physical appearance, Shedim could at will. But the worst was that they were nearly indestructible, requiring a weapon sanctified by an Ash Angel's life to kill them. Luckily, Shedim were few in number, but where they came, destruction followed. One question nagged him. Dreads are men revivified and evil spirits being cast out of God's presence. What are Shedim? Are they denizens of hell brought to earth or what?
Did you miss that class? She asked. That's one of the first ones they teach.
I got some of it, but I was probably being slow at morphing or something for the rest. She thought for a moment.
I'll explain it like this. Think of the world moving between two walls in a hallway. It never stops moving. Behind one wall is sunshine, and the other, smoke. Whenever an atrocity is committed, a hole is punched in the wall and black smoke pours into the hall. Whenever an act of kindness or charity occurs, sunshine floods in. Creatures of evil are constantly knocking holes in their wall to let the smoke in. We are trying to plug their holes and let the sunshine in. When truly horrific acts are committed on a grand scale, a huge hole is blown into the wall and smoke pours in. Shedim are that evil smoke, something we call Vexus, made flesh. They are created by a ritual involving an unwilling sacrifice. But we know little else, other than that the greater the atrocity committed at a site, the greater the power of the shed created from it. Some have believed there are ancient dread loremasters who keep the secret of the ritual. But all our efforts to figure it out have failed. So, like I said, we are moving down the hall continually. Light and smoke from old holes gradually fades and dissipates over time. While all the bureaucratic record-keeping and forms are annoying, the organization of the Ash Angels has done pretty well in recent years at protecting atrocity sites from becoming shed nurseries. Needless to say, a mission where a shed is involved is no place for a cherub.
So why does Arcus Magdalene want me to go? The trip sounded more unappealing by the second.
I can't figure it either, Jarhead, she said. Guess you impressed her at the debriefing. Trace sensed that Cassandra wasn't being perfectly honest. Magdalene had said more than Cassandra let on. Anyway, Jarhead, don't get a big head. You'll probably get yourself killed by the end of this one.
Thanks. Do we have a cover?
You don't. I do. And another blank operative, Corinth, will as well. The only way I agreed to take you was if you stayed in a support role running surveillance and comms. Goldbow is coming as the muscle.
Trace scrunched his eyebrows. No offense, but it seems you and Goldbow don't work well together. She stood abruptly and gathered her things.
Don't go down that road, Jarhead.
Like you said, I've got no right, but I've got a reason. I want to know if you two can play on the same team before we go jumping into Davy Jones's locker.
Cassandra threw him a sour look. I can handle Goldbow. Get your torched butt over to Trev XD by 8 tomorrow. As part of the agreement, you have to see Oberon for a session today. Have fun with your new friends, Harlot and Skin Deep.
And she was gone. Maybe he could ask Goldbow what had happened between the two of them. He seemed nice enough. Too nice to want to be involved romantically with the hard-edged Cassandra.
Trace turned his attention back to his pile of belongings and decided he had best get with Oberon. The assignment scared and fascinated him, and if he could do well on a real mission, all his past flouting of protocol might be forgiven.